today's guest, Chad Foote, Director of Sales at Hengst Filtration.
It's gotten, I mean, it's accelerated. You have things like, you know, the AI tools that are coming in that are just revolutionizing what people are able to see and do. And there's so much data that's available. But now we have, I think, really the tools to be able to mine through that data and actually find unique opportunities to strategically place ourselves to create advantages for our companies and our partners in the marketplace. So it's been, yeah, it's been a wild ride.
Tech Talk, the Automotive Aftermarket Podcast.
Hi and welcome to another episode of the Tech Talk Aftermarket Podcast, recorded live from the Apex show floor in Las Vegas. I'm Christian Müller and today I'm joined by Chad Foote, Director of Sales at Hengst Filtration. With years of experience in the aftermarket and a career spanning multiple German companies, Chad knows exactly what it takes to build a strong brand, deliver premium filtration solutions and navigate a competitive North American market. We'll talk about why German engineering is a key differentiator, the challenges of logistics in a country as vast as the US, and how Hengst is driving sustainability in filtration. Plus, Chad shares his thoughts on the future of the aftermarket and the role of EVs in filtration technology. So without further ado, let's jump right into the podcast. Hi and welcome to the next episode of our Tech Talk Aftermarket Podcast. Today, live from the show floor at Apex Las Vegas, and we have another exciting guest. It's Chad Foote from Hengst Filtration. Hi, Chad. Nice to have you at the show.
Hey, Christian. Thanks for having me, man. Looking forward to it.
And it's been a busy week for you as well so far, because Apex, it feels it's back in full swing, even bigger than ever.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we've had a lot of meetings, a lot of appointments. It's been really good foot traffic as well, so we're happy to be here. I think even when it's, you know, an Auto Mechanica type year, sometimes you want to think, maybe the traffic is not going to be as good as it would be, but it's been a solid show thus far.
Yeah, I agree. Like, even though it's an Auto Mechanica year, I still see a lot of Germans around, so... That's a good sign that people see the importance of the event. And I mean, you have your Germans around as well. We met Adrian, who was a guest at the podcast this season as well.
Yeah, we've got three of them. We've got Oliver Nabrotsky, who's our group vice president, is there. We've got Mark, who takes care of our LATAM market as well. And then Adrian, who's in charge of product. So yeah, we've got a good showing from the German side this year as well.
Yeah, great. And for our audience, could you give them a little introduction about yourself and your role at Hengst?
Yeah, sure. So been with Hengst for about 6 years now. So since the 2018 timeframe. Previously to that, I've worked for two other German companies. So it's kind of a thing with me where I can't get away from them. It's been good.
So you're a bit obsessed with Germans.
Maybe the cars, you know, maybe that's just the piece that, you know, keeps me coming back for more. But I've been with Hengst for 6 years now. Role as director of sales. And so I've got responsibility, not just for our sales, but also for our product management, our cataloging team, customer service, logistics, all fall up underneath me. And we've had a great sales ride thus far. You know, it's been really great. It's been a smaller market for Hengst in North America, and we've done a lot of great things to start gradually, incrementally increasing the business here. And the brand awareness, obviously, that's important too.
Yeah, and as you said, you've been with Virol before, right?
Yeah.
Also a German company.
Yeah, exactly.
And then before it was also a company specialized in German parts or something.
A small company called PEX. So it was an electronic brakewear sensors. And so were out of close to Stuttgart, down there in the Mercedes home of Germany. And so we did electronic brakewear sensors. And for me, that was the first time getting involved in the automotive aftermarket. You know, I was kind of recruited into it. It wasn't one that I started saying, I want to sell car parts, and especially not electronic brakewear sensors. Yeah. It's not, you know, a super sexy a car part to go out to sell, but it was one that really was a need in the market, and we were able to identify some good opportunities working with people like AutoZone, and it's just been a good run thus far.
And how did it happen? How did you get to this company? Because I always talk to our guests about the aftermarket, and as an outsider, it's like, I mean, it's a large industry, but as an outsider, you usually don't have any idea about it.
No, I think it's, you know, totally true, because most of the time, most kids don't grow up and say, hey, I want to go sell automotive aftermarket parts. We were talking before the podcast started. I mean, I started in more of a technical sales role, working with computer technology like Cisco, and, you know, doing IP telephony and wireless mesh networks and doing those types of sales. it was crazy. The downturn in the economy, I want to say around like 2008, 2009 in the U.S., there's a huge downturn. And so the company I was working for previously had laid me off. I went to work for a small physical security company doing like access control and CCTV. And I sold a company called PEX and sold them for their whole warehouse. And the general manager came to me one day and said, "Ha, would you ever think about selling automotive parts?" And Christian, it's so funny because I like laughed in the guy's face. I feel bad about it even to this day, but I literally laughed in the guy's face.
And you were like, "I'm not a sales guy. What's going on?"
Well, it's not even that. I said, "Listen, I started out selling like, you know, technology, and then now I'm selling, you know, physical security, which I felt beneath me." And I said, "I'm not going to bottom out on automotive parts. Yeah. Like, I'm just not going to go down that low in life." But it's the best thing that ever happened, man. It was really what got me into this industry was the opportunity to strategically think. They were looking for someone to come in strategically think. And if you look back at the automotive aftermarket, it hasn't always been cutting edge. When you look at a lot of other industries where, you know, at the time, no one was doing like, you know, website scraping. You weren't doing like advanced data analysis. BI tools weren't really anything that was going on inside of the automotive industry. And those were the types of things that we got to do. And we really did some fun things over the
course
of the
year. Yeah, and I think even in that time span, then you are in the aftermarket, it evolved rapidly.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's gotten, I mean, it's accelerated. You have things like, you know, the AI tools that are coming in that are just revolutionizing what people are able to see and do. And there's so much data that's available. But now we have, I think, really the tools to be able to, you know, mine through that data and actually find unique opportunities to strategically place ourselves to create advantages for our companies and our partners in the marketplace. So it's been a wild ride.
And you, as an American, as you said, working for all these German companies, so is there anything that makes German companies special, like in terms of their business approach, in terms of their working culture? But I assume there's something you like about German companies, because otherwise you would probably leave to another one.
It's definitely the cars, right? I mean, you guys make some of the greatest cars, you know, in the world. We love the Mercedes and the BMWs. But no, all joking aside, what I like about Germans is most of the time they're very straightforward.
Yeah.
They do not pander, and it's very black and white. Your expectations is very clear. Have you done a good job? It's a yes or no. It's not usually like, it's okay. It's really, you know, a straightforward answer. So I appreciate that.
Was that difficult at the beginning?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm a pretty straightforward kind of guy too, so I was kind of used to it. So I'm okay with, you know, you're doing good or you're doing bad. I can take the criticism. I think for us, from a goal setting perspective, sometimes there's some differentiations where, you know, it feels like a lot of the German colleagues from previous companies as well, it's very much about hit the number. Mm-hmm. And in the Americans, sometimes we set the goals very high and we swing for the moon. Yeah. And if we get close, we think, oh, we've done a good job.
Go for the moonshot.
Yeah. And so we kind of go big. The Germans are very much about hit the number. We want to hit the number. Yeah. We want to hit the number. So.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I guess especially in Europe the automotive aftermarket is pretty German, because like the biggest brands are of course German brands. But I think what I figured out in the discussions we had, that also like these big German companies are now driving a more local market approach, because I would say in the past European companies had the mindset like, yeah, if it works in Europe, I do like the exact blueprint and put it into North America, put it into Asia, put it into Africa. Yeah. But that usually doesn't work. You need to adapt to the local market needs.
Hanks has been absolutely huge, and they're a big fan of putting, you know, local people in charge. Yeah. And it's not an organization that's micromanaged. You know, we have clear goals and expectations, and we've got vision and plans that we put in place globally.
Yeah.
But we've also been empowered in our local markets to adapt and find what works for our markets to make sure that, you know, we don't move away from, you know, the core competencies of who our company is, Hanks, but also adapt to make sure that we're successful in our local markets. And that's just been an absolute joy working with Hanks and being able to have that freedom and the autonomy. And obviously it comes with responsibility too. You have to, at the end of the day, you have to perform. And that's something that we've done here in North America as well.
Always have the impression that you have a very good working culture. I mean, knowing Adrian, knowing you, seems, and also others from your team. So it seems like a nice place and nice people to work with.
Yeah, it's... if you need a job in Germany or anywhere else in the world, you know, please check us out. I mean, we're certainly looking for good quality talent. I mean, I think for us in the global sense, we're looking for great talent to join our organizations to help us continue to move onward. But it's been great. And with Christopher Heine, who's our CEO, is just an absolutely great guy to work with. He's always got a smile on his face, and he pushes us. You know, we certainly get pushed to exceed and do really well. But it is a great culture.
So is it also a problem in North America to find qualified labor at the moment?
It is tough. It is absolutely tough. We've got some back office roles that we've been trying to find and fill inside of North America for our business unit in the aftermarket. And it's been tough to find, you know, good talent, even for expansion roles that we're looking to do. It's not always easy to find the right people. And it's not just the talent, but it's also, are they a fit for your organization? Yeah. And that's always important for us when we're making the assessments of who we're going to bring into our teams.
So also like soft skills, and how do they fit from the character?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously character is, you know, hugely important. Can you trust someone to come in and do what you've asked them to do? That's for me, that's paramount. They've got to be able to be trustworthy. Yeah. But beyond that, like, do they fit with the current team that you have and the current culture that you have? And, you know, or is it going to be they're a great performer, but they just don't feel like they're part of the team? Yeah. For me, being part of the team is definitely important, not just being able to be the smartest guy in the room.
Yeah. And in your current role, what are the biggest challenges you're facing?
Oh, man, that's a great question. I think for us, it's the talent, you know, making sure that we have the support. So we've had great year-over-year growth here in North America. Hengst is an emerging brand, I would say, from a filtration perspective. When you look at European passenger car, that's certainly something that we've made incremental success. But really getting the people, getting the team in place to make sure that we can support growth moving forward. You know, we've got a great logistics team. We've got a great customer service team. And we want to just continue to augment, add those pieces in play. So we have that best of class customer service, the best of class, you know, logistics. So when someone wants a Hengst filter, they're going to get it on time, and they're going to be able to then deliver it to the garage and put it on those vehicles where there's, you know, a small amount of downtime, and that they're able to keep their obligations for their customers as well.
And you already said it, if someone wants a Hengst filter, so how important is branding here in North America?
I mean, it's putting North America, the brand out, it's like absolutely huge. I mean, you look, you have brands like Apple that are just like iconic, right? It's a brand in itself. And so a lot of Americans, they put, you know, brand stamp, but when they look at a German company, I think that differentiates us already, right? We're a German company. So there's the ethos in North America that the Germans build great things, the quality, the engineering, and that it's going to be performed well. So I think that's a great start. But then because Hengst has an OE heritage as well, we've worked with Mercedes since like 1960. Yeah. We've had a great OE tenure with them. A lot of people look at that brand and say, we trust it. But for us, again, sometimes we're not the largest player because we're going into, you know, more European passenger car. It's a very small segment of the VIO in North America, as your data would say. I mean, it's probably between 7-9% of the VIO here in North America. Yep. So it's a very niche play. But we've got some great distributors.
But every NFL player wants a G-Wagon.
Yeah, for sure. I do too. Yeah, I got to sell more filters. But I mean, yeah, it's one of those things where, and again, when you own a vehicle that costs anywhere from $200,000 to $300,000, you know, give or take, someone wants to make sure that they're going to take care of that. And oftentimes, if they're not doing the work themselves, which most G-Wagon owners probably are not changing their own oil, they're going to a trusted garage, and that's really where we're trying to market and make sure that that garage understands the quality of our filters, and, you know, that they're going to take care of the engines for the longevity of the owner.
And is it also because of the German cars here in the U.S., the car park is more like, it's more upmarket cars, so the owners, they put a big emphasis on quality of the parts they're putting in?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, definitely when you look at the German car park, you got Porsche, you got Audi, Volkswagen, you've got BMW. For us, those are more of a luxury line. And so people that are going to pay that type of money to be able to drive those cars want to maintain them. And so they're going to put a great quality product in. And Hengst being an OE brand definitely gives them that comfort and reassurance that the filter is going to do what it's supposed to do over the lifetime.
And what part plays the driver in the end? Is it in North America the case that the driver specifically says, oh, I want that brand of a filter, or is the decision making with the mechanic?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we definitely in the US, and maybe it's a little bit different than Germany, we have a very healthy DIY culture.
Yeah.
Where there's a lot of guys that, like Adrian, like to work
yes.
and tune on their cars. He's the exception maybe in Germany. In the US, it's definitely a culture thing. And so we have certainly a demographic that requests tanks filters.
Yeah.
They like our quality, they like our branding. Whatever about us specifically resonates with them, they request it. And we've got some great e-com partners that we work with that allow them to have that distribution. But the bulk of our product is certainly going into commercial garages.
Yeah.
And that is definitely something where there's typically choices. And there's a couple other competitors in that European filtration space that we compete against. And so we often have to position ourselves. We've got to work with the sales team for our distributors to make sure that the garages are aware of our availability, of our quality, and make that choice and choose Hengs.
Yeah, and today it's all about value-added services. So what do you offer for the mechanic, for the garages?
I think for us, it's, again, they know what they're getting in a yeah. Hengs filter. When they open it up, because we OE for several different yeah. European brands, they know that the quality is there. They're not going to
including Bugatti, as Adrian
Bugatti,
told me.
There's a yeah. couple of really unique ones that we
yes.
have that are very cool.
Yeah.
It's one, maybe we have a Bugatti here coming up soon and put it at the Apex and
yes.
let everybody have a couple of rides. Or maybe you, Christian, you bring yours and we can, take a
yeah.
ride around
yeah.
the street together.
I figure out how I can ship it next
yeah.
year.
I know a guy. We got some great logistics teams. But yeah, I mean, most of the shops, when they're looking at a Hengs filter, they know that when they unbox it, the filter's going to fit, it's going to perform, and
no.
that vehicle's not going to come back. And they're not going to have to worry about any type of premature wear or tear or the gaskets leaking.
Yeah.
It's just that peace of mind. I don't have to be concerned that
yeah.
this isn't going to perform like it's supposed to.
And do you also offer trainings for workshops?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's something that we typically do with our partners. Mm-hmm. From our distribution perspective, we'll go on site with them and work with their teams to make sure that those garages have, the insights of maybe some nuances for specific filters. Most of the time, the mechanics are pretty well versed on how to do an oil change. It's not really something that's deep
yeah.
in training, but we certainly want to make sure that when you start looking at like transmissions, there's a little bit more of touch points that you have to do it just right, and we want to make sure that
yeah.
we convey that information to them.
Yeah, totally. And filtration technology came a long way, I would say, in the last year. So what are some of the innovations you guys are currently bringing to the market?
I mean, for us, it's not so much that we're trying to put out a filter that is better than the OE. We typically want to stay with the OE specifications.
Yeah.
And so whatever the original equipment manufacturer is specifying, that's really in the aftermarket. That's our benchmark that we want to typically to adhere to. I think that's important as well, because there's oftentimes the ability to put too fine a filtration into the marketplace. And there's
yeah.
a lot of filters that have this like long lifetime type, replacement adage where the filter may go longer than what was specified by the manufacturer.
Yeah.
And sometimes you run into instances where the filter can have such a fine media that can filter out additives out of the oil
yeah.
and actually harm the engine. And so for Hengs, we've always maintained, we want to make sure that we've got that OE specification in mind when we're putting those products into
our
box.
So it's about having the best performance, not like just focusing on longevity.
Yeah, I mean, again, if you're following the increments of what the vehicle
yeah.
is specified in the owner's manual, if they still have owner's manuals,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
As we keep going with technology, you want to be able to follow that cadence. And that's with
yeah.
using a spec oil as well as using the spec filter. And you're based on your drivability and what the vehicle tells you, you change the oil and the filter within those
yeah.
time frames. That's typically going to be the best way to maintain your vehicle moving forward.
Yeah. And from your perspective, how does the North American aftermarket differ from the European one, for example?
Definitely size. You start looking at our car park in North America, it's basically similar to all of Europe. So the U.S. is a very large car park when it comes to passenger car and commercial vehicle.
Yeah.
I think the big difference for Hengs is the amount of commercial vehicle product that we sell globally is much higher in Europe and our other markets.
Mm-hmm.
It's a higher portion of our overall sales, probably closer to 60 to 70% of what we sell globally is commercial vehicle. The big flip side here in North America is we sell probably about 70 to 80% passenger car. So
yep.
a lot of our product that we push into North America is passenger car based. We're certainly working to start introducing more commercial vehicle products, and we have a lot of great OE relationships with Daimler and PACCAR, et cetera. And so we're going to be leveraging that in the future. But really the size, that's the big thing. Yep. Is North America is a big market, and there's a lot of people that want to come into that market. And I think a lot of people think because it's so big, it'll be easy to sell. And that's where having really boots on the ground that understand the marketplace are going to allow you to be successful, whereas just putting product in and thinking it's going to sell because it's big is oftentimes not the best solution that we've seen.
And in terms of commercial vehicles, you focus on trucks, heavy commercial vehicles.
Yeah, the class 7 and 8s. You know, so the big 18-wheelers, we say, here in North America. We've worked with like Daimler for a number of years, as I mentioned earlier, and some of the big engines they have are the DD13, 16. These are just the massive motors, and we make not only the filter for those, but we also have our own castings as well. So we do our own aluminum die casting and be able to produce the whole oil module assembly. We do our own plastic injection molding. So it's really a complete solution. And that's what most of the OEs love about Hanks, is we're able to come in with complex engineered solutions to make something work and fit where others may not want to, really get into that level of granularity.
Yeah, and I guess also with heavy duty, you are mostly dealing with large fleets. So it's very good to have like such large customers because you sell a lot of product.
We've got a long ways to go. We certainly have a long ways to go, but that's certainly something that we're targeting, is more and more fleets. So we've worked with a couple of great large fleets that we've started with the last couple of years. And really, they're looking at how do we create cost savings. The economy is definitely foremost on a lot of people's minds, and the fleets want to figure out how do we still maintain great drivability, not have maintenance wear issues, but at the same time, how do we create cost savings? Yeah. And that's certainly an area that we've been able to capitalize on.
And large, I mean, in the US really means large. I mean, it's not unusual to have like a heavy duty fleets of 25,000 vehicles.
They get pretty massive, I mean, typically what we'll see is anywhere from 5,000 to 6,000 trucks, for a specific like engine size, and they drive a lot of miles too, right? I mean, that's the other thing. It's not just a lot of cars in our country. It's a long ways to go anywhere. Yeah. You start driving. I live in Florida, and so to go to the top of Florida down, I mean, it can be 12 plus hours to get from one side.
But you took a flight here to Nevada.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's no way. There's no way I'm going to drive. It would probably be nice if I had, that Bugatti like we were talking about. That might make it a little bit easier. But flying so far.
Well, you can't drive fast enough here. Wouldn't be that big of an advantage.
That's the detractor, right? I mean, over in Germany, you guys have the Autobahn, and in certain areas, you guys can go
Only when you visit Münster.
Yeah, that's it. Or Frankfurt, for the Automechanica, as well.
And in terms of your sales channels, so what are the important sales channels, and what role plays e-commerce in this mix for you?
That's a great question. I mean, for us, partnership is paramount. And, our mantra really in the marketplace is not to be overly distributed. We certainly don't want to be overly distributed. So we're selective in who we work with. Most of our channels have been what we consider import specialists. And so you think of people like Worldpac or SSF or people like Northside that have really specialized in the import European sector. But that really doesn't stay. In this day and age, you have companies like Worldpac that have, gone beyond just European vehicles into Asian and into domestic. Yep. And so I think there's a bit of a blurring when it comes to distribution. And it's more of, do I have the right part at the right price, close enough to my customer to be able to service them quickly? And certainly the brand challenge in North America is that, because there's a lot of brands, and it's oftentimes difficult to make sure that they're selecting your filter when there might be 10 other choices that a distributor may have. But so for us, it's those distribution channels that are key for the European side. And then we also look at other areas like retail as well. That's some things that we're exploring out, is there a fit for us in the retail sector? And then when it comes to e-commerce, we've got a couple of great partners that we work with, like FCP Euro. I'm sure you're familiar with them, as well as like ECS Tuning. Those have just been great relationships with us for the last couple of years. And really that allows anybody to get access to our filters. They really can just pick up, their iPad or their iPhone and order the filter, and they have it for the project that they want to do.
You're also selling on the big marketplaces directly? like Amazon, eBay?
So we have some distribution that goes through like Amazon. It's certainly something that we can't necessarily control at all times. But really our goal is to make sure that every Hangs filter that we have is available to the garages and to the consumer. And so that's where we see e-commerce as the ability not only to make those products available to our customers, but also raises the brand profile. I mean, a lot of people will start on Amazon to do their research.
Yeah.
And we want to make sure that when they're coming to, you know, Hanks on the filtration, that they're understanding who we are and they're able to make, you know, an informed decision when it comes to the purchase of the filtration products that they're buying.
You mentioned it. So how important are the logistics? Because if a mechanic orders a part, he wants to get it quite fast. And as we said before, the U.S. is a big country. So how much of a challenge are the logistics?
It's huge. And Hanks is being a global manufacturer. We've got a huge footprint. We manufacture in Europe, in Asia, down into the LATAM markets, as well as in North America. We do our own domestic production. But we always say that no one waits for a filter. You have to have it right away. So for us, having those filters available is paramount. We have our own warehouse here in North America, so that certainly helps with the logistical footprint. And then we've got great team members as well. So Manuel over in Germany is a guy that really helps us from an aftermarket perspective, make sure that we have the right products. Yep. And you have to connect the dots too, because you have production that has to know how many filters do we make to in order to have enough on the warehouse to then be able to ship to the customer. So it's hugely important, and putting more tools in place to better analyze that data of what your customers are needing on a day in, day out basis. You've got to be able to get them those filters as quickly as you can.
And there are also now this Chinese e-commerce players stepping into the U.S. So we have our Temus and AliExpress. So is there a threat that they are flooding the market with cheap products from China? Or
I think it's always something that we've had here. I mean, North America is a large market. I mean, having products from Asia is nothing new. I think the consumer is definitely aware of quality. It's something that is interesting for the customers. And so even if there are a flood of quote-unquote cheap products, that's typically not the customer demographic that Hanks is going after. We're never going to be the cheapest filter in the marketplace. We're very much a premium filter. And the garages, the distributors, and the consumers that we're working with are very much quality conscious. So There will always be an influx of product coming in. I think for us, the piece that we also have to keep in mind is that as your brand grows and as your success grows, there's certainly people that are willing to try to copy that. And so for us, looking at counterfeits and making sure that the products that are getting into North America and our other markets are truly Hanks products. And our teams are definitely investing the time and efforts to make sure that people are getting a true Hanks filter.
Yeah, and I can imagine scanning all these platforms is a huge effort on your side.
Absolutely. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of effort. So it's something that we're committed to, though, to make sure that everyone has.
In general, I would say, so my impression is that American car culture, the typical American, he takes good care of his car. So it's important. So it's something what people always say about the Germans. Like in Germany, for some, car is like a family member, I would say, and they treat their car really well. But also I have the impression in the U.S., you're doing a lot of oil changes in the U.S. And how do you think does this help you in terms of the branding? You want to position yourself more as the premium supplier?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, I mean, for us in the U.S., the demographic for the vehicles are growing. The age and the population of the cars are getting older and older. And I can't say that everyone takes care of their cars immaculately, but there's certain that, that target demographic that we're looking at is once that car comes out of the original OE manufactured warranty period, typically that 2 to 3 years old, that's when it becomes a Hanks customer. That's really when we're trying to position ourselves to be able to capture that product life cycle at that 3 to 6 to 8 years. And that's where we put a lot of effort in making sure that we're positioned from an availability, from a product and a quality perspective to be able to win there. That's really where it makes sense. And then as the vehicles age, that's where I think more so people are cost conscious. They don't really regard a BMW, unless it's a classic or a Porsche or something like that. When it's a 3 Series that is 20 years old and it's not quote unquote a classic, they're not really looking at premium quality. Maybe
it's
the third,
it's a beta
fourth.
Car.
Yeah, exactly. It's a fifth owner, and that's not really the demographic that that we're going after as well.
But if they're buying a new M4, you want to make sure they're using
100%. 100%. Yeah, and we owe you a lot of those M motors as well. So we want to make sure that they have the availability. And that they're choosing Hanks in the marketplace.
And also in terms of branding and marketing, is there still a big focus on motorsports, or do you nowadays need also other campaigning to reach your customer base?
It's one that we certainly balance within our company. For us, our focus is to make the planet a pure place. And that's really our mantra that we stand behind. And so a lot of the filters that we manufacture are cartridge-based elements. Most of those have a very small carbon footprint with the energy that we use, as well as the combustibility. So there's not a lot of great impact. There's some impact, but not as much as maybe a traditional spin-on filter as well. So we're trying to keep that in mind as we're positioning ourselves in the marketplace.
And is sustainability, is that a topic to sell your product? Because with sustainability, we also have these two different levels. So the one is like, it's a legal topic, of course, because you have to fulfill a certain sustainability criteria. But the other level is there a business case for it? Is there a demand for it? And can you turn sustainability or more sustainable products in a sustainable business?
I think there will be. I don't know that today there's a massive push that a filter has to have that sustainability characteristics. Yep. But as government starts to put in more requirements for businesses to be able to hit carbon credits, et cetera, then that's certainly going to be an area that fleets, I think commercial vehicle, are really going to be concentrating on and saying, here's a way that we can have, offset maybe some of these government requirements and be able to be more sustainable. But it's certainly the core of who we are. We are all about sustainability, both in Europe as well as North America, and putting together filters that are going to have a very small impact. And and we're also very excited about, consumers that look at, hey, we've got one planet and we want to take care of it. We want to make sure that it's something that we can pass on to future generations, and we leave it in a better state than we found it. And that's certainly something as a company that we want to be a part of as well.
Yeah. And in the broader sustainability topic, now for a couple of years, we have the so-called rise of the EVs. And we learned, I guess, that it's not coming as fast as it was projected 5 years ago, but still battery electric vehicles will come into the market more and more at some point. So what does this mean for Hengst as a company?
For sure. I think if you look at companies like Ford, we have the Ford Lightning, and then all of a sudden Ford just discontinued that as of late. And so it's one of those things where we want to make sure that we're putting products in place for EVs that the market is wanting. And I think sometimes when government gets involved and tries to force a market into purchasing something that's not quite ready, that's where you kind of get some of the pushback. And again, North America is large. We're talking about driving from one side of Florida. It could take 12 hours. That's a lot of recharge time, and it has to be practical. And certainly we have, as a big country, a lot of natural disasters. Where I live, hurricanes are impactful, where you have no power potentially for a week
just
or
recently.
So. And we've had a slew of them. So it makes it like challenging from an EV perspective. But if you look at the aftermarket, we're cognizant that at some point in the near future, there will be more EVs on the road. I don't think it's going to be an impact in the next, 20 to 25 years that we're going to see that's going to dramatically affect the car park. But Hengst is certainly looking at what other products can we put into the market that will allow customers that even have EVs to continue to choose, Hengst. And there's certainly filtration that takes place both in the cabin and some of the battery coolant that we want to make sure that we're positioning to be a good solution for them as well.
No, and even, you could argue that like the automotive aftermarket itself is a sustainable business, because our mission is to keep cars longer on the road. And then you need to say, okay, is it more sustainable if I drive my car like 5, 4, 6 years longer or buy EV?
No, you're absolutely right. It's one of those things where I think everybody, not just from an economical impact of should I buy a new car, should I lease a car, should I maintain the vehicle that I have, but there is that point where what's going to happen to that vehicle once I get rid of it. Yeah. And we don't want to necessarily have it, like, you know, crushed and going into, you know, a landfill prematurely. We want to maintain these vehicles as long as we can.
You don't want to become cars like a mobile phone and becoming a disposable object.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's, again, I mean, as an industry as a whole, those are things that we have to wrestle. And just even from an economics perspective, right, Christian, if you start looking at the average price of vehicles in the U.S., they're expensive. You know, you've got cars that are pushing anywhere from like $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $80,000. And we're not talking about premium cars. We're just talking about just normal cars.
Yeah.
And that certainly is, you know, driving more and more consumers to, hey, I want to take care of my vehicle. And when I want to take care of my vehicle, I want to make sure that I'm putting products that are going to allow it to go as long as it can. And that's really where we come in and we shine.
Yeah. At the end of our podcast, we always take a look into the future. So what do you envision for the next not so distant future, but if we would meet at the Apex in 2030, what do you think would be the topics we are talking about in general, but also for Hengst?
I think for us in the aftermarket specifically, we're certainly putting more of an emphasis on other products that we currently OE manufacture. So it's going to be more of our what we consider our automotive 2.0 products. So that's going to be products like CCVs, that are plastic injection molding that we do. We're putting emphasis on other products like oil module assemblies as well. So the product mix is going to start evolving beyond just filtration for
diversification of your portfolio.
For sure. And I think that will be the conversation that we see in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years. Is there's going to be more of a move to other products in addition to filtration. But then also the mix of products that we're selling into North America, it's going to be more commercial vehicle. We're putting a lot of emphasis to get filters into those fleets and be able to give them that performance that they need, cost savings, and be able to keep moving a lot of product across North America, you know, successfully. Hengst as a whole, again, sustainability is a massive portion of what we're trying to, you know, accomplish as well. So we want to make filters
and we saw
clean.
It at Automechanica Frankfurt when Adrian sneaked his first product placement into our podcast with his sustainable new filter range you were prototyping.
Now it's an awesome product, and one of those that we put out there. Sometimes we don't know what the market is going to accept, right? We can come up with great ideas, but if the market doesn't accept them, then it doesn't get further than that. And so really for us, that was a look and see opportunity, and we got some great feedback, you know, on that particular filter. So we're looking forward to seeing how that, you know, molds in the future. So we're excited about it.
Great. And thank you very much for taking part at the podcast this morning. And I wish you a good show.
Christian, it was a pleasure, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Take care.
That's a wrap on this episode of the Tech Talk Aftermarket Podcast. A big thank you to Jet Foot for having this great conversation and providing us with all the insights from premium filtration and brand positioning to the challenges of logistics and the rise of sustainability. It's clear that Hengst is making its mark in the North American aftermarket. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to follow our podcast and stay connected on LinkedIn for more industry insights. Thanks for listening and see you next time.